Welcome back, folks, and oh boy, are we going to learn how to do something that's incredibly dangerous. I don't even really want to explain it to you, but you really need to understand this, and as we've said in the past, knowledge about syphilis is not an instruction to go get syphilis. So let's discuss selling short. And before we do that, we need to talk about buying long or going long. And that's slide 25. So let's get yourself to slide 25 and look at that title, Long Stock Purchases. What does that mean? Yeah, that's what you do when you buy a stock. You buy long. It's called going long or buying long. You're hoping the price goes up, which isn't that what we normally want? Yeah. It's a transaction in which investors buy securities in the hope that they will increase in value and then can be sold at a later date for profit. This is the type of transaction that people commonly think of when they hear that someone bought stock. Buying long is the most common form of transaction, of course. We have an expectation of dividends or capital appreciation or both. You've heard the term buy low, sell high, right? That's the idea. Isn't that what you want to do? Yeah, of course. Slide number 26. You purchase one share of common stock for $20 and the market price rises to $30. So maybe you want to get a little sketch pad or a piece of paper and write these things down. So, what happened? You bought it for $20 and you sold it for $30. Congratulations! You made $10 on a $20 investment. That's a 50% increase. Oh, of course, if the price dropped to $10, you lost $10 or half of your investment. A 50% decrease. So you got that? That's called going long, buying long. And that's what most people think of when they think about buying stocks. Ah, dear students, is that the only? No, it's not. Slide 27, selling short. And as I said, we've already made mention of this, but now we really have to understand it. And you're going to just love it. The first time you explain this to people, they often go, that sounds illegal. So stick with us and see if it sounds illegal to you. It's called selling short, shorting the stock, going short. The sale of borrowed securities. Ooh, see, you sell something that isn't yours. You borrow it. The eventual repurchase of the shorts by the short seller, the person who borrowed, you have to buy them back, and their eventual return to the lender. It's the opposite of buying long, selling short. You are hoping that the price goes down. You see, you sell high in the hopes of buying low. It doesn't really matter which way you do it. You can buy low and then sell high, or you can sell high and then buy low. It doesn't make sense. Well, no, it's done all the time, folks. Selling short must take place in a margin account because you are borrowing the stock that you're selling. So by definition, it must happen in a margin account. In other words, what are they going to do? They're going to do a credit check, make sure you're trustworthy, because you're borrowing stock. Now, you borrowed from another investor. They don't know that you borrowed it from them. It's all done by the back office. You sell it out in the marketplace. When the price goes down, you then buy it back. So see, it doesn't matter which way you do it. You could buy low and then sell high, or you can sell high and buy low. You make money both ways. Here's an example. Here's how it works. Slide 28. You borrow the stock from another shareholder without their knowledge, and you sell it on the market. So you receive money for selling stock that you do not own. Gee, it doesn't sound legal. Well, relax, folks. You've written in the contract. You've signed a contract that says you're going to buy it back. You're not going to sell something that you don't own and then run out of the country. You wait for the stock price to go down. You then buy back the shares at a lower price, pocketing the difference. You see, the shareholder you borrowed the shares from never knows the shares are borrowed. The brokerage firm does all the financial sleight of hand. What do you think happens when you put your money in the bank. You think, yeah, right. Do you think they just held it there? No, they lend it out. They lend out your money, and they take care of everything going on in, behind their backs. I'm not behind their backs, but behind the office, in the back office. Oh, by the way, if you do this and the company declares dividends, you must pay the dividends that the company declared to the investor who you borrowed the shares from, right? Because they're expecting dividends and you sold their shares. They don't know that they're sold. So you must pay those dividends. And as I say at the bottom, doesn't it sound as it should be illegal? Well, you're going to buy it back eventually, so they're going to get their shares back. And so here's another example of how it works on slide 29. You borrow the shares from somebody today, and you sell the shares in the marketplace, and you get the cash, right? And then eventually you have to buy the shares from the market and return the shares. You understand? Yeah. You're renting the shares from somebody, selling them, and then going out and buying them back and giving them back to that person. If the price goes down, you have made money. If the price goes up, you have lost money. It's the opposite of buying long, selling short. Think about it for a while, folks. Think about it for a while, because it's done all the time. Slide 30. Here's an example. Slide 30. You sell a stock short for $20. You receive $20 from the sale of your stock, even though the stock was not yours. Remember, you borrowed it from somebody else. So you borrowed 100 shares or whatever. That's one share we're doing. You sell one share. You sell the share for $20. Now, it's not yours. It's somebody else's. You borrowed it. But you receive 20 bucks. The stock price goes down to 10, yippee. You now buy the stock back at 10 bucks, and it's called closing out the transaction, and you give that stock back to the person you borrowed it from. They never knew it was gone in the first place, and you keep the $10 difference. Think about it. If you have a couple of neighbors on one side, each on one side of you, and Fred and Charlie, and Fred just bought this gorgeous riding lawnmower from Sears, for $500, and you saw it on the news or the ads or whatever, tomorrow it's going to go on sale for $250. So you go to Fred and say, hey, can I borrow your riding lawnmower? And he says, oh, I guess so. So you borrow it from him and sell it to Charlie next door. Say, hey, Charlie, I know you were in the market for a riding lawnmower. Here's one for $500. He goes, oh, cool, that's just the one I wanted. So you sell it for $500 to Charlie. Then the next day, Sears says, well, it's on sale for $250. So you run down, you buy it for $250, you bring it back and give it to Fred, and he says, oh, thanks, it looks brand new. Not bad, you see, if the price goes down. And in our example on slide 30, you borrowed something, sold it for $20, and then later on bought it back for $10. You made $10 on a $0 in, wait, that doesn't sound right. Yeah, no, you can't make $10 on a $0 investment. How does it actually work when you go ahead and try to do this? Slide number 31. You cannot really make $10 on a $0 investment. It is in a margin account. Do you remember? Remember? You borrowed the stock that you sold. The rules for a margin account still apply. You must put up at least 50%. What? 50% of what? 50% of what you borrowed. Well, what did I borrow? I borrowed a stock worth 20 bucks, so I have to come up with 50% of what it's worth. 50% of the proceeds from the sale of the borrowed stock must be put into the account. They're not going to just let you sell something that isn't yours without putting anything in there to show, hey, you know, I got some skin in the game. And again, the brokerages use the account's balance sheet or their computers to keep track of the investor's margin. And we'll take a look at some examples of margin requirements accounting in a few slides. So slide number 2. Now let's revisit this golden scenario where we bought something for sold it short for $20. and bought it back for 10. We look like geniuses. Well, let's say we sold the stock short for 20. We borrowed it from somebody. They don't even know it's been borrowed. We sell it for 20, and we get the 20 bucks. We have to come up, as we said, with half of that, so we have to put $10 in our account. The stock price now goes up to 40. We have to buy it back at 40 bucks. Remember, you borrowed it. You must replace it at some future date. You must buy it back. You can't just say, well. No, you still owe that share of stock back to the person you borrowed from it. You lost $20 on your short transaction if the stock price goes up. Slide 33. When you buy long, you can only lose the purchase price of the stock. That's it. Remember we said, when can you stop losing money? When it hits zero. You buy the stock for 20, it goes to zero, you lost $20, it's over. When the stock reaches zero, it cannot go any lower. It can't go negative. However, when you sell short, there is no limit to the amount of money that you can lose, theoretically, folks, because there's no limit to the price of the stock. A stock price can always go higher. And we say theoretically because you're probably thinking they're not going to let me lose an unlimited amount of money, and that's right. You're going to get a margin call because if you lose an unlimited amount of money and then you send them a postcard from Aruba or whoever, wherever, you know who has to pay. Right, the brokerage firm is the ultimate backstop. So they're going to keep a very, very sharp eye on you to make sure you're not doing anything. And we got the margin requirements that we'll see in a bit. So, here is the formula that calculates the margin on short sales. And again, I'm not going to ask you to do this on the exam. I'm not going to ask you to do this. It's on the worksheet, but this is what you'll get on the Series 7. I assume they're still asking you this question, but it's all computerized. So, if the stock were sold short for $20, you would have to deposit $10. Remember, you have to put up 50%. So you take the margin deposit, the $10 that you put up, the $20 you got from selling the stock, minus the current value of the stock, which, let's say it's the same day, $20, divided by the value of the stock at 20 bucks, and you do all that, and you wind up with 50%. Right, that makes sense. So, slide number 35. Here are the account balance sheet problems. So here's a... This makes it easier. It makes it easier to do the calculations. This is the one from page 49. It's Texas Instruments. But yeah, if you have a different edition, it'll be on some other page. And I think they used to use Sears, now they use Texas Instruments. So you think Texas Instruments is going to fall. You sell short 300 shares at 30 bucks. So you 100 shares at $30. My apologies. So you go to your brokerage firm and say, I'm going to borrow 100 shares. And they say, no problem. They borrow from somebody that, they don't know who it is, but you don't know who it is. And you go out and sell those shares. So you receive $3,000 from the sale of the shares. Now you have to come up with half of that. Oh, you see, I still have Sears. I got to change it. You receive $3,000, but you have to come up with half of that. Because it's a margin account, so you can't, borrow 100%. You only borrow 50%. So your margin is now 50%. You proceeds from the sale is $3,000. Your initial margin deposit is $1,500. So your account total is $4,500. Well, on the right side is the liabilities in account equity. We sold short 3,000, and so 100 shares at 30 bucks, it's worth 3,000, and our account equity is worth 1,500, right, because they have to balance. And again, if you don't understand this, if you're not a whiz at accounting, don't worry about it. This is done for you when you're a broker. Slide number 36. Now let's say the price of Texas Instruments falls to $20. The short position is going to fall to 2,000, 100 shares times $20. So now our margin is going to be the 2,500 account equity divided by the value of the security. On the margining example, it was the left side that changed. But in shorting, it's the right side that changes. This side of the balance sheet does not change unless you bring more dollars in, right? Unless you bring more money into the equation right here on the initial deposit margin, the initial margin deposit, because the proceeds from the sale doesn't change. We made that transaction in the past. That's not going to change. We received the $3,000 when we sold the stock short. So our account equity has risen because the position has fallen. The stock is now worth only $2,000. So we could turn around and buy it for $2,000 right now and have made a tidy little profit. We made money because the stock price fell. But what happens if the price rises to $40? Well, this is a different situation, isn't it? Now the stock is worth $4,000. Remember, this side of the equation doesn't, this side of the balance sheet doesn't change. We put up we got $3,000 from the sale of the stock. We still have our initial margin deposit. Unless we bring in more cash, that doesn't change. So now the short position is $4,000. When we go to buy back these shares, we've got to come up with $40 times 100 shares, or $4,000, and our account equity is $500. So our margin is now 12.5%. Folks, they're not going to let this happen. Your brokerage maintenance margin is 40% because you're selling short, and they think you're a goofball because if you sell short, in my humble opinion, you are. It's very dangerous. So you received a margin call long before this happened. And what happens when stock prices fall volatilely, you know, quickly, very, this is, you know, wow, margin call instantly. So boy, this is scary, scary stuff, folks. Slide 38. Here's the formula to come up with the price at which you will get a margin call. So if you sold 100 shares short at 20, your proceeds are 2,000, right? 100 shares times 20, that's $2,000 that you received. And that doesn't change because you sold it. The transaction's already done. You had to deposit $1,000 because it's a 50% initial margin. Your company has a maintenance margin of, say, 25%. If you plug in all those numbers, it turns out that that stock only has to go from 20 to 24 before you get a margin call. And if your maintenance margin were 35 or 40% because they're worried about you selling short, you would have gotten the margin call much sooner. The stock only has to rise to 22 or 23. Selling short is very risky, folks. Don't do it. Look, Peter Lynch says don't do it. And who am I to argue with Peter Lynch? Your brokerage firm will keep a close eye on you. Now, if you're absolutely sure, and I almost did it, folks. In 2005 and 6, I was looking at GM, and I was pretty darn sure GM was going under, and I didn't think there was anything that was going to happen, other than the company being bailed out. That's what I thought might happen. Of course, that's what happened. But that didn't save the stockholders. The stock still went to nothing. And I kept saying, short it. And I said, no. Peter Lynch says don't short a stock. When you short a stock, you're basically hoping bad things happen to the company. And I don't like doing that. I wish everybody success. So that's me. That's me. That's my personal bias. You decide what you want to do with shorting. Slide number 39. A short squeeze. This happens often. When the market is going down, momentum investors will often short stocks to try to take advantage of the down momentum. They'll pile on, sometimes it's called, and they'll start shorting. This pushes the market down even further. But eventually, those short sales must all be repurchased. The subsequent up movement of the market is often dramatic as short sellers cover their positions. So what's happening is when people are shorting, it's like pushing down on a spring. You're pushing down, and eventually that spring is going to, bing, fly back up again. Because they gotta be bought back. You can't just, not buy them back. Unless the company goes bankrupt, then you don't have to worry. Then you won. Game over. The short interest, and I think we took a look at this in the in when we did the Yahoo. I don't know, maybe we didn't. But if you go look at the key statistics of a stock in Yahoo, and of course, you know, whichever Bloomberg or whoever you use, you will see one of the key statistics is short interest. The amount of stock shares that have been sold short. If investors believe the company is in danger, is in trouble, the amount of short interest will be high. Now, does it mean they're right? Not necessarily, but you do have to be careful. It's like getting in front of a train, you know. If the price is plummeting and you say, I'm going to get in there and buy, well, we've talked about this, isn't it? That's why it's called capitalism and markets. In the August of 2002, and, you know, that was a really rough time, 2000 to 2002. It wasn't anything like 2008, which was more like a bolt of lightning from the gods above that struck us like, you know, it was just dramatic. 2000 to 2002 is more like water torture. Except if you were in internet stocks, then it was like several bolts of lightning. But August 2002, I'm thinking, oh, this has got to be over soon. And one of the other brokers said, hey, look, the short interest is the highest it has ever been in the history of the United States stock markets. And I thought, oh, good. he thought so, too. But another guy was like, ah, that's great. Let's buy it. Sell some more short. You know, he thought it was going to keep going down. That gave me great comfort because to me it meant that the market downturn was close to an end. And it was. October, it didn't feel like it at the time, but October 2002 was the bottom. And then it came back up again in December and then hit. Oh, it didn't quite hit October 2002 again, but right before the Gulf War, not the Gulf War, the Iraq invasion, another Gulf War, but March of 2003 is when it finally started to come back. So you know, it doesn't happen automatically, it doesn't happen right at once, and nobody rings a bell at the bottom, but that to me gave me great comfort. And in that case, it turned out I was right, but that doesn't mean you're always right. So does it make sense, folks? Does it make sense selling short? Are you going to do it? That's up to you. But realize that it's riskier than margining, and it's very risky. It's not for the faint of heart. There's a tremendous amount of money you can lose quickly, and your brokerage firm is going to keep a close eye on you because they can lose a lot of money if you lose a lot of money. Slide number 40. There used to be a valid reason for shorting a stock. Not anymore. It was called shorting against the box. Huh? What a stupid name. But that was what it was called. And it was shorting stock that you already owned. Wait a minute. Why would you short a stock that you owned yourself? That doesn't make any sense. Well, there was a reason for it. But the IRS says no more. On slide 40, we see that it allowed you to essentially sell the stock without creating a taxable transaction until you closed out the transaction by giving your own stock. Remember, you have to buy the stock back, but if you own it, you can just deliver your own shares. So, for example, you thought the shares were going to fall precipitously, but you didn't want to sell your shares now. It's December. If you sell your shares now, you have to pay the tax in April, or by April. If you wait until January, you can postpone the taxes for another year. So you could sell it short in December, get the cash, wait until January, and then deliver your shares. Well, guess what? Right, the IRS does not allow this, and has not allowed this since 1997. So my advice, folks, never short a stock. Good luck. Whether you do or do not, that's up to you. So the only valid reason for shorting a stock is now gone. And one last time, folks, one last time. Slide 41, registered representative, are you interested, folks? I hope so. You don't need a degree to get started in this industry. Work as an internship. Work as an intern. You get college credit. Try to get a broker's assistant, a broker's aide. Show them the syllabus and what you've learned, and you can do it. You can do it. And they're going to help you. They're going to train you also. And if you do take the Series 7, contact me. I'd be happy to help you. With those, the tricky ones are shorting and margining, which we just did, right? Margining and shorting. And options, Yeah, those are the tricky ones. Everything else is just rote memorization, which it's a really stupid exam in my humble opinion, but that's what you got to do. And once you've passed it, everything else is pretty darn easy in terms of, you know, what you have to do to keep your job, other than going out and selling stocks. And that can be that can be difficult, but in terms of the tests and all that other stuff, no, there's nothing. You know, they're going to want you to get a degree, obviously. Eventually, you want to get a degree, but you don't need one. They love women. They love minorities that have skills in other languages. Well, that's not necessarily minorities, but I'm just saying they like bilingual. They love people from the military because they've been in a structured environment, and this is a highly regulated structured environment. They'll do a background check, so, you know. And I love to hear my students who have gone in the industry and how well they're doing and the like. So I already have a few, so I'm very excited. Okay, folks, that is our discussion of buying and selling securities, margining, shorting sales, and our next chapter is not from the book. It's miscellaneous topics in investing. So we'll discuss account types, real estate, REITs, real estate investment trusts, precious metals, hard assets, and the like. Okay? We're almost near the end, folks. Don't give up. Never give up. See ya.